Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and give us a follow on Twitter at OTGBasketball. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always on this Saturday morning, Harris Wishard. What's up, Harris?
A little snow on the Northeast, but that's not too much of a complaint when I think, you know, we obviously love the NBA, but the entire world took a major hit. And we'll start off today with, you know, the loss of Craig Sager, the colorful, passionate, respected sideline reporter of the NBA that passed away at the age of 65, Nick.
Yeah, very sad news. You know, we knew he was he had this battle with leukemia, and our prayers and thoughts go with his family. It's really saddening. And, you know, Craig was just a true professional. He kind of did things his own way with that little flair he had with his style, but he was well respected by the players. And we saw throughout the NBA, a lot of people showed their support for him and his family. So it's nice to see the support. It's a sad day to hear the news.
Yeah, there are a lot of people. There are pioneers. You hear that word thrown out a lot. There are trailblazers. There are, you know, true unique individuals. But you saw the amount of outpouring support on Twitter. And you looked at, you know, I watched Inside the NBA on TNT. You know, I really liked that show and what Shaq and Charles had to say about him, the commissioner. People in other walks of life, just the impact this man had. And I think if you're doing a job that Craig Sager does, the more life and personality you have, obviously the better. But he had a true care for everyone else around him and making everyone around him better and also enjoy their jobs like he did. And, you know, me and you both love the NBA and want to someday, you know, get a couple of checks from that industry. And if we have half as much, even a quarter as much of that same kind of energy. A lot of people talk about his energy and his just enjoyment of life, and the ability to spread that is second to none. So a tremendous loss. And you compare it to what Stuart Scott and what we've gone through at that. And, you know, his famous Sager's famous quote was, what was it? Time is just
how you live your life.
Yeah, exactly. Something I know everybody had those ties and those kind of shirts on around the league. But again, tremendous loss for the basketball world and just the amazing impact he had. And you just take away, my takeaways are, you know, he just loved his job. And, you know, anytime you love what you do, it's not work. You hear that all the time. And he just enjoyed showing up. And like you said, the players and the top players around the league had a tremendous amount of respect for him because he respected them. And he carried himself as a true professional, both on and off the floor.
And you mentioned how they talked about it on TNT. I think Shaq said something like, Craig always asked the right questions. You know, he talked about how when he was in L.A. and Craig didn't really ask him about the situations off the court. He focused on the court. So he was a real professional in that aspect. And, I mean, you got to love his style, too. I heard KG mention it. There's that famous little video clip of KG telling him to burn his suit.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, Craig was really – he really had his suits all planned out, like, day by day, like, month by month. It was pretty pretty interesting stuff, but it's definitely a loss for the NBA.
And then you know he's real. You know he says the right things, like you said, ask the right questions. But I think the players realized how much he really cared about other people and asking the right questions that had nothing to do with what was going on the basketball floor. How's your wife? How's your family? He just seemed like that genuine, nice person, and no one could say a bad word about him. So you understand the impact he's had. After someone leaves the earth, you find out what kind of impact they had. And, you know, he's one of those people, just one of those special people that, you know, put everyone else before – it seems that he had put everyone else before himself. And, you know, he's known for the fashion, and he's known for all the flair and those interviews with Pop. And you mentioned the one with Garnett. But I think the big-time takeaway is what kind of human being he was at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, a grade A person, you know, and you definitely can tell, like you said, with all the support he's seeing, you know, it's his legacy was definitely something special.
Right. And again, as we move forward and the NBA mourns this loss, there'll never be another person, I think, quite like that in today's, I want to say today's generation or make it like a societal thing. But there's one thing for sure. That's a unique, you know, take on what he was. What he was accomplishing and going through in his career, and a guy that went through, like, again, what Stuart Scott went through. And it's sad to see somebody go like that at this age that had that kind of impact on people.
Yeah, for sure. It's hard to move on from that topic, but I guess let's try to talk about some of the NBA teams. One team that's starting to really cook right now, the Houston Rockets. What I think they're on a 9-game winning streak. James Harden's on a tear. They just broke the record for 3-pointers in a game and attempts with 24 and I think like 60 plus attempts. Do you think the Rockets are like starting to surprise some people? Are they a contender in the West or is this kind of all show?
I've talked about how Beverly has made a big difference in their opponents. PPGs has gone down a little bit, and they kind of seem to be more cohesive. They're still giving up 105 points a game, averaging 113, which is good for second in the league, obviously behind Golden State. But guys like Ariza and Anderson, when those role guys play well for them, they're in really good shape. And they could be a lot better. I mean, we know that they've been better than we thought they were going to be. Again, like you mentioned yesterday, the 24 threes, excuse me. And they kind of had that reputation of when they've been around it, because they shoot it as much as anybody, as kind of stepping on people's throats and going for it and not concerning themselves with the score, which I don't really mind that much. You want to be in the record books, go ahead and be in the record books. I never take offense to that. But the Rockets are for real, I think. There's now four teams in the West with 20 or more wins through about 27 games. So four teams now playing 740 ball. But I never really disliked, and you know me, I don't dislike the D'Antoni system. You just have to have guys on the other end. When you have a guy like Clint Capella, you have to have some people that want to step in front of somebody. And that's really the only beef with. Other than that, you could get the most out of people in the offense end. We never questioned D'Antoni's ability to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, they have the weapons offensively. The signings of Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson are looking pretty good right now. Also, Sam Dekert's had some nice minutes off the bench. So, I mean, you said it right, D'Antoni's system. I think they have the pieces that fit well. James Harden is just like destroying everybody right now. I feel like it's just such a great fit for him. You surround him with these shooters, you put him in that pick and roll. He's able to create, either get a shot to the rim or, draw a foul. So, they're definitely deadly, and if they can play some type of defense come playoff time, I mean, they'll definitely be a tough out for anybody in the West.
There are some guys that have a defensive mindset. Like I talked about Capella and then Beverly,
And yeah,
obviously.
Beverly is definitely, you mentioned, it had a nice impact coming back. He kind of gives him that little extra edge, gives him a few extra steals, turnovers. He just kind of annoys the other team's best perimeter player at times.
Think they're 14-2 in his 16 games. I know they were 12. Yeah, I think they've won 9 in a row, and he's only played in 16. He was suffering from that knee injury, and he came back. But when Mike D'Antoni could make Raymond Felton and Jeremy Lin, and all of this, these impacts he's had on what would we consider the average, maybe at best above average players, and we knew that Harden's numbers would be inflated a little bit, but they're really not if you look at what he did last year. But I think he's more doing it more in a dominant way this year, and in a more effortless way. It's not
Effortless for sure. Like,
as hard for him, no pun intended, and his player efficiency rating is through the roof. So he's been fantastic on that end. I haven't studied him as much as everybody has studied him on the defensive end. He does, have those pickpocket steals every now and again and get out in transition. But I think for everybody, they just think it's fool's gold. They'll win 55, 58 games and not be able to make that deep run in the postseason that this team has aspirations to do. But you have five guys averaging double figures, including Capella. And they space the floor as well as anybody in the league, including Golden State right now. They're abusing people from the 3-point line. Like you mentioned, Gordon playing 30 minutes a game, shooting the ball at a high clip. So,
He's talked about how he's loved to play in Houston and
yeah.
how he's had so much more freedom than New Orleans, where he was more of a catch and shoot guy. So I think he's feeling a lot more comfortable, and he just gives him another element. Because I mean, Eric Gordon is a very good player, and I remember when he was on the Clippers back in the day, and there was a lot of talk about potential, but then injuries came and hurt him. So there's a
Well, if you
ton
want
of.
freedom, if you want freedom, it's like when people from other countries come to the United States for freedom. If you want freedom, come to Houston. I mean, D'Antoni has ne no one has ever complained on the offensive end about freedom and getting the most out of guys on the offensive end. We know what he did in Phoenix and what he tried to do with New York, and the Lakers experiment didn't work. But this seems to be like a match, and there's the right pieces in place. I'm not sure. I mean, they did beat Golden State in overtime. Harden played with Durant for a few years, like we know, so maybe that could have an impact. I know when Houston matched up against, and they had Howard at this time, I think they might have. But when they matched up with Golden State, they gave him a couple of tough games before, not last year, but the year before in the conference finals. They gave him a couple of tough games in Golden State. So Harden, I think, likes matching up with Golden State. He in his mind, he's the best player in the league, and no one's going to tell him otherwise. We know that's probably not true, but in his mind, he's not going to back down from anybody, and I think he has this group playing at a high level.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you like to see out of that player, too. I mean, he'll probably be in the MVP discussion as well, especially if the Rockets get close to that 60-win mark. But do you think – I mean, I know obviously it's early, but do they have the offensive firepower to compete with the Warriors and the Spurs and the Clippers? Can they beat those teams? Maybe not the Warriors, but can they beat the Clippers and the Spurs in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's – the jury's still out a little bit. I know it's 27 in, and once we get to that, like, midpoint point of the season, people are going to want to see if they're still playing at that level. And I think there's just a hesitancy to accepting this team as a true contender in the West. You feel that also, right?
Yeah, no, there is definitely – well, last year they were a big letdown. You know, right. they were expected to have a lot better season last year, and they finished towards the bottom of the West playoffs. So – I think, you know, you want to see them consistently do it, but a 9-game win streak is always impressive. I mean, when you can string wins together, that means you're coming in night out and performing.
Yeah, and I think 27 gets it gets your attention. You start paying more attention to the team. Yeah. You watched him the other night against the Nets, and it's almost stole that game.
Yeah, they do have – I mean, exactly. I watched them the other night against the Nets. They do definitely still have some issues, but, I mean, they did – they pulled away the game. They got the W, so – and, you know, when you have a closer like James Harden, it's a lot easier to win close games. But like you said, we got to see what they do all year long and see. I want to see if they can keep this up, that offensive, that shooting up all year. But, I mean, it's tough to say they can't because they have the players. Like, you know, you have guys like Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, James Harden, Trevor Ariza, all guys that can shoot the three ball and get hot.
I wonder what we put them at in our prediction for the beginning of the year, how many wins we had them at. But – right now, I'm going to give you a question. Over, under 55.
You know what? I think they'll get over. I think they'll get like 56.
Yeah.
Because I think
I'll say mid-50s at this point is fair. I think in the prediction, we probably had him around 50. But I think now, you know, watching him play over the first couple months of the year that, you know, we have them, you know, higher in the higher 50s now.
Yeah. I mean, and James Harden, he's just been on some other things, and like you touched on it before, not to mention it again, but it's looked so effortless on the court in the system. Sometimes he just looks like he's just like tossing the ball to his teammate, like it didn't even take much energy at all, and they're getting a wide open shot.
Yeah, Harden in a league now where physical contact on the perimeter is not what it was, as we know. He's just strong, and he just – the body contact, I compare it to – you know, this might be for Knicks fans, they might cringe when they hear this comparison, but – you remember when Marbury used to play, like you get in the lane, it just didn't feel like he felt anything. And Westbrook obviously is really strong too, but when you're a strong guard in today's NBA, it just holds a lot of weight because of what guys can and can't do to you now. And I think he just seems to bump off, and a lot of people complain about his style, and you've heard Draymond Green make a point about it and you know, how he flails his body around and looks for calls. He does play to the officials, but again, his body is, you know, a lot of people said he's not in like the greatest shape, but I just think his body is really suited for today's league as far as strength on the perimeter goes.
Yeah, no, it makes a big difference having a strong guard, especially when you have some of the players that are like skinny, you know, and they're frail and you're going, you have some size to you. It's a lot easier for you to get in the paint. And, you know, I think it's kind of a skill for him to draw fouls. You know, that really helps your team.
Like, he's smart.
Yeah.
He's a smart, like there's a Curry's is one a guy to do it a lot too. There's an intelligence to it. There's an intelligence to being in the right spot at the right time and to anticipating where guys are going to be. And there's a lot that goes into understanding the not only drawing fouls, but spacing. And I think that's why Harden and D'Antoni are a nice match because mentally there's a capacity there for Harden to understand and absorb the information. And I think he's a lot smarter of a player than you know, people might give him credit for.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
12 assists a game, too.
Yeah, I think they just see him the same eye level.
Yeah.
So I asked this on Twitter, I think, like a few weeks ago. What do you think would be more impressive, somebody averaging a triple-double or leading the league in assists and points per game?
Well, you could do both. I mean, you could see a guy like Westbrook do both. But
you could.
I'm gonna have to say average a triple double. I didn't think I would see it. You know, maybe I don't know with the way the game's changing and the game's played. I think averaging a triple double is an absolute joke. Like, and Westbrook is leading the league in scoring, and he's second in assists to Harden, and Harden is like fifth in scoring and first in assists. Harden's not going to be there rebounding wise as far as the leaders.
Yeah.
But, you know, Westbrook is what in rebounding? He's got to be top.
I mean, he's probably top 20, top 15.
11th in rebounding.
11th, damn.
That's incredible. And so we haven't seen anybody quite like this. And we talk about it almost every show. What he's doing is nothing short of spectacular. You're running out of superlatives to describe the guy and adjectives to describe what he's been on lately in OKC. But I read this article in Slam about Westbrook, Oladipo, and Adams. And Adams calls Westbrook the energy guru. And he says he understands how to get the most out of his body. If it's not helping him get better, he won't get involved in it. And whether it's his diet or just how he spends his free time, he's just always – he has it. Some guys just have more energy than others. Like he has a motor that we've never seen. And like his energy levels are off the charts. And I'm pretty sure if Westbrook needed to, he could play 48 minutes every night.
Yeah, he definitely probably could. I like wonder if Westbrook is ever lazy, you know, like does he ever have a lazy day? Like does he sit around ever? Or is he just
that's a great question to ask. What is a down Westbrook day look like?
It's like you find out he's like training for 4 hours. Yeah, that's like my lazy day.
No, it's a great question to ask. And, you know, they talk like obviously his teammates talk very highly of him. I think there's a respect for his competitiveness. So I think guys overlook some of the angry, like chippiness you see. But I think when Durant left and Westbrook went comfortably take over the team, that the camaraderie and the chemistry became a little bit better. Because I think when Westbrook and Durant were there, like we've talked about ad nauseum, the friction that I think it was in the locker room at times. But I think that the Thunder have relaxed a little bit and obviously letting your best player be your best player. And they're 15-11, so we thought they'd be a little bit better. But I think averaging the triple-double to answer the original question is the most difficult maybe thing to do in all of basketball. You know, we've seen some amazing feats.
Yeah, that would definitely be something special.
In Bill Simmons' book of basketball, he talked about all these records that he never thought would be touched. And the 72-win Bulls thing is something he talks about. We saw that go. You know, we've seen some incredible individual achievements. We just saw the three-point record go. I think we could see some other things go. But in fairness to Oscar Robertson – and I don't know, maybe it would be – that's another – was it more difficult to do then or now? Is the competition level and, you know, played
in the – I think that's something impossible to determine. Yeah. So, like, people will probably chirp on that for a long time. Yeah. But I feel like, you know, you're never going to really be able to say which was better. But on to something else. So we know the Sixers, you know, they're not a very good team. They have all these big men. They have Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor, Joel Embiid. And Sarg and Ben Simmons, they're all front court players from small forward to center. So Nerlens Noel yesterday after the game, I think I'm too good to be playing 8 minutes. That's crazy. That's crazy. That's crazy. We need to figure this shit out.
Yeah.
Do you have an issue with Nerlens Noel coming out and saying that? What do you think about this situation? What do you think the Sixers are going to do with this?
They're 6-20. So, I mean, has he gotten up? He's probably gotten ample opportunity to show what he is about. I'm not about this in the media. I've never been about – if you have a problem with your playing time, that's something you got to bring up with your coach and have a meeting with him. I just think it brings locker rooms apart. I know you probably are on the same page with me on this one. You know, you can't get any worse than they are. But especially because 17 of their 26 games have been at home and they're still 6-20. But I don't know. I just think there's something about going after – management or your coaching staff and in public, that just something like this would never happen in San Antonio. I think it speaks volumes of the organization and just how they run things over there. And it's just not a good look for him.
Exactly. It's not a good look. And if you do want to get traded, saying things like this does not help your cause.
No.
It lowers your value. And I've already saw reports around the league that people are kind of nervous about Nerlens Noel's attitude. And if I was already nervous about it and he came out and say this, I definitely would not trade for him. His value is probably very low. He was injured earlier this season. He's came back. He played a few games. It doesn't look like he's going to get a ton of minutes. So, like, the Sixers maybe should have moved him sooner, because now it looks like they'll probably get nothing for him. And it looks like they're almost going to be. I mean, they might try to move Okafor still. I don't think they'll
Yeah,
ever
they
move
have.
Embiid.
I remember you talking about in the preseason. You had mentioned about, them having too many of the same guys, and the emergence of Embiid has probably also made Noel feel a certain type of way.
Exactly, because Embiid's a lock. Like, he's out of the three, you already know that Embiid's probably going to be the best player. I know this is.
The highest ceiling, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, long as the injuries don't catch up to him, he's already done things on the court in his rookie season that Nerlens Noel and Okafor haven't done.
Okafor has been playing a little better recently.
He has. He's a pretty good player. I think with a different system, maybe some more veterans to kind of help him lead the way, he'll still be a good player in the NBA. I just think Embiid's potential is so much higher, and he's such a great fit with the NBA with his 3-point shooting, his ability to handle the ball a little bit, and his shot blocking. He's kind of just one of those special players.
Isn't that the amazing thing about this organization, is that they've had a lot of these similar pieces, and you never quite know when something's going to click, when it's not going to work, when it's going to work. But the worst thing that you could have is for, especially for a young team. I think that's why with Minnesota, Thibodeau is going to handle those guys out there, and it's not going to be an issue. But the worst thing you could have on a young, struggling team is somebody speaking out against the media, and they have too many of the same pieces. They have too,
Yeah.
and it's just it something's not right there. It's just not working out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love when trades are happening. So, I mean, hopefully they make a move soon.
You're a big trade guy.
Yeah, I love
You're
trades.
the guy.
Like,
You're sitting together. You're doing all your the generators and seeing what works, what doesn't work.
I'm fiending during the NBA trade deadline. Like, I'm like, I can't wait. We haven't seen like a huge blockbuster recently. Hopefully
When's the
this year.
date of the trade deadline?
It's usually around like February, I think 15th, like in the mid-February around there.
Right around Valentine's Day, All-Star break type of thing.
Yeah, actually, it might be February 23rd. I think it's closer to the end of February, but it is something around there.
I think it's definitely after the All-Star game.
Yeah. Oh.
I look forward to in a couple episodes breaking down our All-Stars, seeing who we have different.
Yeah, I think All-Star, you could definitely see some new All-Stars this year, but we'll save that for another episode.
I'm looking
Talking about
forward to
All-Stars, we have the Chicago Bulls.
that.
They have a few All-Stars on their team. Start the season really hot.
Right.
Now they're on a 3-game losing streak. I think they lost 3 of their last 7.
And a couple in
Back
a
to
row to
back.
Milwaukee.
Yeah, back to back blowouts from Milwaukee. And we're not talking about blowouts, the Bucks pulled away in the third quarter. This game was already over in the first half both times. So the Bulls look like they have some. I saw this on Twitter a little bit, and I could see the idea where it comes from. The Bulls have issues with young athletic teams with the age on their roster. Do you think the Bulls, this is kind of more of the Bulls team that we're going to see all season long, or is it the one that we saw at the start, or is it kind of in between? What do you think about this team?
I think they're just a five. I think they really are just a 500 team. I mean, they did rely on Wade. Came out of the gates hot, right? We know he's aging a little bit, so he came out of the gates hot. Butler's the franchise piece. Rondo has bounced around a little bit. So for me, because the three seed is 14 and 12, and there's legitimately, and I don't know if I've ever seen this even this late in the year, the Pacers are 13 and 14, the Celtics are 14 and 12. There's legitimately eight teams separated by a game and a half. So there's definitely no reason to panic, but I didn't think they were world beaters earlier in the year, despite some of the results and things. And I think they were feeding off the energy of Wade coming back home a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think they were playing a little bit better than they are. The back-to-back blowouts are concerning. There's some chatter in their locker room right now, and they're trying to figure
Especially to
things
the
out.
same team.
Yeah, I think they're definitely going to try to figure some things out. I watched a couple minutes of one of these games, and the one thing that stuck out is that, the Greek Freak and Jabari Parker seem to be developing some nice chemistry.
Yeah, they definitely do. I mean, the Bucks look like they have something going in Milwaukee.
They
I
do.
mean, I always last year they were had a letdown season. I mean, Chris Middleton's still out for them this year, but they're still doing some nice thing. Jason Kidd's never really scared to try something different. And like this team definitely, he has some interesting game plans against certain players. Like against the Bulls, they just came hard double teams of Butler and Wade and made them feel uncomfortable all the time. So I think that's something they do. And for the Bulls perspective, I think, like you said, Wade came out really hot. I saw a video on Basketball Breakdown like earlier in the year talking about how the Bulls likely wouldn't sustain this success because they hit so many tough shots early on, and you can't hit tough shots all year long.
Mm-hmm.
So
like I think you said with age, that'll catch up to you. You'll have spurts where you play good basketball, but it's hard to be, you know, extremely consistent when you're relying on some of those guys. But I don't think they're really that old. Some of the poor guys. But
I mean, I don't think necessarily old, but maybe the athleticism.
Right.
They have struggled against – I think they struggled against the Bucks. I think they lost to the Lakers twice this year, a young athletic team. So some of those young athletic teams give them issues. If you look at their starting five, Rondo, Wade, Butler, Taj Gibson, Robin Lopez, other than Butler really, none of those five are great athletes.
Yeah. I mean, Wade was, yeah.
At this point in his knee injuries,
right,
you know, he's not quite there. And Taj Gibson's never really – he's more of an underneath-the-basket type of guy. And Robin Lopez –
Are they having transition issues?
I think it's a combination of transition issues defensively. Just, you know, across the board, like basketball, when you have the young teams just running at you every single night, you know, they get tired, so.
Yeah, and then they also went on that long West trip.
Yep.
Taking consideration, I think that was like they were out of town for a while. And, you know, I'll double check it quick, but they left on the 9th. I'm sorry, no, they left on the 15th of November and didn't come back didn't have a home game until the 30th of November. I mean, they won some of these games. Like, look, a good win. They blew out Portland in Portland.
That's a weird thing. They have good wins, too.
Utah in Utah. That's a solid win. They obviously, you know, they did beat I think they split versus the Lakers, so they did win one versus the Lakers. But
they just recently, in this 3-7 stretch run right now, one of the wins was against the Spurs. So it's like, it's kind of, they're a weird team to kind of gauge. So, I mean, I think
the Pistons, they lost at Dallas by like 25. So
that's terrible.
They really do like, and again, I know that Rondo is also one of those guys that, and this is another team that you wouldn't count out in the playoffs because of the names.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean,
in the playoffs, first.
If you get to the playoffs, the game slows down a lot. It's a lot more physical, a lot less fast break, and you rely a little bit more on your starters. So, I mean, come playoff time, as long as they get in the tournament, they still have a chance. So, but I mean, I think, like you said, they'll be more. They won't be one of those top seeds. I think they're kind of just fool's gold early on in the season.
Yeah, and you know what they. We talk about how important it is to try to avoid Cleveland in that first round, and we've seen teams push the Raptors or Celtics, wherever that is in that two slot. I think the teams at the bottom of the East can push them. The Pacers have been tremendously underwhelming. I think there's also a problem in Chicago. Not to harp on the Bulls too much, but Hoiberg. I mean, I don't think he's the answer there. I just see a disconnect from him and the players, and I just watched some of the huddles, and I'm not sure everything is where it needs to be with him.
Well, Jimmy Butler had some criticism of last year, saying he didn't really get after him enough.
Call us out enough.
And I mean, part of it, I think Hoiberg was kind of hoping this year he would get kind of a younger team, and then the front office went and signed Rondo and Wade, so it kind of threw things off a little bit. I don't know if they're on the same page, but that's, like you said, something to keep an eye on. Something exciting, at least from my opinion, that they talked about earlier this week, the D-League trying out 4 refs.
Yeah.
And something maybe possibly we could see in the NBA in the future. What do you think about this?
Whew. This is a tough one. I think there can never – I mean, with video now, that's the one thing I wanted to mention. With video now and pretty much everything in the fourth quarter, and I know there are certain rules and – what guys look at, what they won't look at. I mean, under two, what, they look at everything under two in the fourth?
Yeah, under 2 minutes.
In the fourth specifically?
I think, I know it's definitely the fourth. It might be the end of the second half too, or maybe, or like end of the quarters.
Right. So, yeah, so they look at a lot down the stretch, and you just don't want to see games decided by referees. And so if adding a set of eyeballs is going to help, I know it's an experiment worth trying out. So many moving parts in an NBA game. So many athletes. So many speed and athleticism, and So the guys that they're training now, and shout out to Zach Zarba, New Paltz grad, one of the better refs in the league right now. But I think I don't think it could hurt. I mean, it's an
I think it would help.
Yeah,
I'd don't be all for it.
Yeah,
because I mean, honestly, nothing pisses you off more, especially being a fan of a team, and like when the ref misses a call on your team and it's like a blatant foul, and you know, like sometimes the ref just is at a terrible angle. Like there's three refs, and like sometimes they're just bodied out of it. So I think an extra set of eyes would definitely help. I think the NBA could probably afford it as well, obviously with all the money we see getting thrown around. So it would make me happy if it gets a game. They make the correct calls, it'd be a lot better. Maybe it would help refs. I think one issue I always see with refs that's kind of annoying is when you see a ref on the other side of the court that probably doesn't even have a good visual of the play, and he's making a call on an area that's probably not even his call. So if you have four refs and they all watch your specific areas, and you know they look for what they're supposed to look for, then you'll see more right calls and less stuff that's just like, especially you know when you see a ref that's across the court on the sideline, and he's calling someone's driving to the basket and they kind of just flop along, but he can't really see the hands. He just sees the guy flop and he makes a call. You know, like that pisses you off as a fan. So if they could clean that up with another ref, I think that would make a big difference.
Yeah, and you know what? Also, so you experiment the D League. It's something that you can't really introduce mid-season in the NBA. Yeah. So in the D League, you could mention that's it's a good way to kind of gauge,
test things out.
And we know what we've talked at nauseam also of the benefits of the D League and what it could do for NBA teams. But also, if there's anything rule-wise, you know, Steve Kerr's Christmas wish is the 4-point line. I don't think we'll see that anytime soon. But other areas of the game that they want to see important improvements, that this could be a nice little guinea pig type of thing for the NBA.
Exactly. I mean, we like you mentioned, we talk about this a lot. The D League is such a huge asset to the NBA.
Yep.
When every NBA team gets their own D League affiliate, it'll definitely have a huge impact on young players. You know, some of these guys that are not getting the opportunity to play on their NBA teams, and they're getting not signed after a year or two, they're going to have opportunities in the D League to really showcase and develop their skills. And a lot of the time, the D League teams, they're running the same offensive schemes that the NBA teams are. So when you get called up, you're just ready to go. You kind of already have an idea of what's going on. So I really like what the NBA is doing with the D League.
Well, I'm going to use this time of the show to send out my hopes and prayers that the Nets do another open tryout so that I could have another, because that was a real cool experience, man. And I know we've mentioned that a little bit, but yeah, like you said, that the benefit is obviously obvious at this point. A lot of the NBA players have touched on where they think it should go, and you know, salary increase and all that other stuff. But it's definitely something that has expanded, and if you want to try this extra referee thing, I think it's a great idea also. And another thing I want to ask you about is the Boogie Cousins situation now.
Yeah,
because this seems to have gone to a new level now that he called out a reporter, and they said he tried to, everyone's talking about him being a bully now, and he's
He like went up to him, was like cursing him out, right, and pointing his finger in his face,
right? Exactly. And a lot of people have criticized him of the way he bullies the organization, and we've seen some bad body language him over the years, but it takes it to another level. And I guess he was upset that the reporter mentioned his brother in an article. I think I heard
about a fight that had previously happened he was with his brother, and his brother got into a fight in, I think, Tampa, Florida. Right. And he wrote how like Cousins was like hustled out, and how Cousins is with people who get into fights. Cousins wasn't happy about it, but I mean, he's a reporter. He's doing his job. You're not going to be happy with what everybody says about you. So,
he knows that better than anybody.
Exactly. As a professional athlete, I mean, obviously you don't like people talking about your family, but sometimes you just, it's part of the job. Yeah. It's something you're going to have to deal with. I mean, Cousins, this is an issue for him. I think he's getting even more and more frustrated with the Kings as the season progresses. Right. Obviously, they win some games here and there, but he can see that they're not going to do anything. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're not going to win a championship. Yeah. So, I like, but this is another situation of your Cousins, and, maybe you do want to get out of Sacramento. You need to be on your best behavior, because the Kings are only going to trade you if they get a good deal. And, you want your value to be as high as possible, so teams are actually interested. And if you come out and you're getting into these – you're with Matt Barnes while he's getting arrested in New York City at a club. He didn't get arrested yet, but he's probably going to. Mm. So it's just – it's just not a good look, like we've talked about in the past. You got to worry about your image.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that just, I'm going to do what I want. I'm the best player on the team. I think it's the best thing for his career could be going to a situation where he might not be the vocal point. and to be humbled a little bit and to be in a winner. Because at this point of his career, you know he loves the attention. You know he loves to be the number one guy. He plays hard. You can't really tell me that he doesn't play hard. But another locker room guy that, you find out that there are some guys that can play. There are some guys that could play and lead. There are some guys when things don't go well, point fingers. There are some guys that deal with things differently than others. Maybe come up to the reporter and ask him why he said that and maybe have a civil conversation about it. We know what Cousins is about at this point. I mean, I'm not trying to bash him or say anything negative because I know that's what everybody loves to do and throw negative energy his way because the guy does play his rear end off and loves to win and tries to compete. But I think at this point, you know, that there are better ways to go about that situation.
Exactly. And I mean – and then there was also an article I read that there was reports that Cousins wouldn't talk to the media unless this certain media member was not in the locker room.
Right. He just didn't. Yeah, exactly. He didn't want that.
Yeah. So he's like, I mean, like, calm down, bro. Like, you know, you're just trying to like get your way.
Yeah.
You know, you can't always have your way. And I think you're right. If he went to a team and when he wasn't either the vocal point or there was other players on the team, like some veterans that were, you know, not playing games. They've been around for a long time. They kind of show them the way and not be scared to step to him if you're like Cousins, yo. Like nobody on the Kings has really been ever able to go up to Cousins after he's, you know, done one of these little antics on the court or when he's complaining about a foul call that he didn't get in his other – in the player he's supposed to be defending is scoring an easy layup. Nobody's on the bench going, Cousins, what are you doing? Like what are you doing, bro? Like get back. So it's like someone needs to kind of step up to him. Maybe they help Dave Yeager with, but it looks like – nothing's really going to come out of that situation, like I've been saying for a while, until he's out of Sacramento.
All right, yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I thought it was a solid show.
That wraps it up, though, for today. Enough about Cousins. Harris, stay warm in this wintry weather.
I'll do my best.
do your best.
Melo coming back to Denver. I know he took the other night off at Golden State. Melo coming back to Denver, something to watch tonight, 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Something to keep an eye on because we know that Saturday night football game isn't going to be very,
very Oh, is that the Jets and Dolphins?
Yeah,
oh, no, I want to mention on the show quickly that everybody wish me luck. I have my semifinals of my fantasy league this week. I got the bye, but Cooper and Matthews are both questionable, so I'm kind of concerned about that. But if those guys don't go, I don't really have anybody, waiting in the wings. So I really hope that I could reach the championship my first year in fantasy in about 10 years, but if it doesn't happen, it wasn't meant to be.
Well, I mean, if Harris is going to talk about it, I got to talk about it a little too. I beat Corey last week.
There we go.
Who was on the show. So next round of the playoffs. This week, I got a little family battle. I faced my dad.
In the semis?
Yeah, in the semis. I faced my dad. He's a pretty good team, so I'm a little nervous right now. But then I'm looking to go to the championship and get my third championship in 4 years.
Wow.
So
I got to get in that. I might have to get in my early reservation in that league next year.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely got to. I'm trying to build my dynasty right now. Hopefully Aaron Rodgers can lead me to that W. But that wraps it up for today. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Enjoy your weekend.
Enjoy, guys, and stay safe and stay out of the snow in the Northeast.